Welcome to episode 96 of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast for the week of April the 14th, 2008. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. On this week's episode of the Fredcast, a follow-up to the GM specialized April Fool's joke. The CHP recommends criminal charges for the deputy in the Cupertino crash. Pro cycling news, Trek sues LeMond, and Davis Finney recovering from brain surgery. Following the news, the Paula Stout story, and finally, our product review of the SRM Power Meter. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. This week's episode of the Fredcast is brought to you by listeners like you. Thank you so much for your PayPal donations and for supporting our advertisers by clicking those links at www.thefredcast.com. Every penny earned goes right back into supporting the Fredcast, and I appreciate your support. Thank you so much. Hey, welcome back to the Fredcast. It's great to have you back with me. It's great to be back here with you. Thanks so much for staying subscribed and for listening to the Fredcast. Hey, as we keep telling you, we are slowly approaching our 100th episode. This is episode 96, our 96th regular episode of the Fredcast, and we are hosting a contest for those of you who have been with us for as long as you have, and we really appreciate your support of the show. So the contest is really, really easy to enter. All you need to do is send me a picture postcard from the location in which you live. Send that to 6300 North Sagewood Drive, Suite H461, Park City, Utah, 84098. Hey, if you missed that, the official rules and the entry information are listed at www.thefredcast.com. Go to the top of the page. There's a tab that says Contest in bold letters. Click there and find out all the information you need to know about entering the contest. And then you could win prizes from Training Peaks, Polar Pack, Spot, Erg Video, iBike, Road Rash Repair Kit, from Dave Shields, one of his great books personally signed, from Ride Clean, Cycle Film, or Nike. Don't forget to get your postcards in no later than the release of episode number 99. This is episode number 96. I've got a great stack of postcards already. Make sure you get yours in as soon as possible. Next up, I wanted to remind you to sign up for Team Fredcast. Take part in a Bike MS event around the country. We've already got a number of teams in Florida, Virginia, Utah, Idaho, California, and Texas, and more on the way every day. Get more details at www.thefredcast.com. Go to the team link at the top of the page. If there isn't a team already in your area, send me an email and I will send you the instructions on how to set up the team where you live. Join the movement. Help us start to finish MS. Hey, you're going to go out there and do those charity rides anyway. Why not do it for a great cause and join your fellow Fredcast listeners along the way? And finally, before we get to tonight's news, a quick note about this year's Fredcast tour. We've been telling you about the Fredcast Transalpine Adventure from Salzburg, Austria to Venice, Italy. And unfortunately, we're canceling this year's tour. I hate to do it another year in a row, but this one we got killed by a couple of things. Number one, the price of the euro versus the dollar. Number two, the soaring costs of airline tickets. Number three, the economy in general. And number four, I got to be honest, a lot of you emailed and said you just thought the trip was too tough. It looks like I will be doing, well, I'm planning on doing a French Alps tour in August, along with Hendrix European Bicycle Tours. This one goes from August 24th through the 31st. I've got a link in the show notes. Hopefully you'll be able to join me for this one. Not an official Fredcast tour as of yet, but a great opportunity for me to get over there, do some audio and video podcasting from some of the famous climbs of the French Alps. And this one's a bit easier for those of you who aren't into the really hard slogging climbs that we talked about in the Dolomites. They're still here in the French Alps, but there are also some shorter versions for those of you who may not be up for the really hard climbs, and also for those of you who might want to bring a spouse or significant other who definitely isn't up for that. So if you're interested, go to the show notes, check it out. It is Hendrick's European Bicycle Tours. It's the French Alps Tour, and we're doing it August 24th through the 31st, and hopefully you'll want to join me for that one. And by the way, for those of you who were signed up for the Transalpine Adventure, my most sincere apologies. We needed a certain number of people in order to make that trip go. You'll be hearing from us very, very shortly via email or by phone to let you know about how we're going to arrange your full refund. And of course, if you're interested in going on the French Alps tour, we can just transfer the deposit you've already made over to that tour. Well, enough announcements and general business related to the show. Let's get down to the news, and let's start with a follow-up to a story that I did on Fredcast number 95. And it was one that, yes, I reported on, but I reported letting you know that I felt that the story sounded a bit fishy and a little dubious, especially considering the April 1st timing. And that was the story about, was GM actually going to purchase Specialized? Turns out, yes, indeed, that was an April Fool's joke played on the cycling community by Carlton Reed from BikeBiz and QuickRelease.tv, Tim Grawl and Arlie Jenkins from Commute by Bike, and of course, really, in my opinion, the real master of this one was Richard Masoner of Cyclicious. And the reason I say that, don't get me wrong, Carlton, when you listen to this, is because what got me and what had me thinking that it could be true was a website that Richard put together that looked like it was a fantastic spoof of the Silicon Valley San Jose Business Journal. Now, had I looked a little bit closer, I would have seen a lot of problems with that website. Things like almost every single link on the website went to Commute by Bike or BikeBiz or QuickRelease.tv or to Cyclicious. Or the fact that when I went to print the article for my show notes, I got a 404 error. And so I should have known. So congratulations and kudos to Carlton, to Richard, and to Arlie, and to Tim for a very well-executed April Fool's joke that they played on a lot of people. And a lot of people got caught in this one. Great job. Very well executed. Happy April Fool's Day. And in another follow-up to a story that we've been talking about quite a bit here on the Fredcast, the California Highway Patrol is now recommending that a Santa Clara County Sheriff's deputy, the one that was involved in that fatal crash up in Cupertino, California, that he face criminal charges after killing two cyclists in that crash. The CHP is suggesting misdemeanor vehicular manslaughter charges be filed, and this is according to the San Jose Mercury News. Now, if convicted on those charges, Deputy James Council would face up to 2 years in jail and could be charged with a felony. Now, originally, people were hoping that the CHP was going to charge the deputy with gross negligence, but the CHP does not believe that those charges would stick because he was not drunk behind the wheel. Now, of course, these are just recommendations, and it will be up to the Santa Clara County District Attorney to make the final decision as far as which charges to file, and I will let you know as soon as those charges are filed, because quite honestly, in my opinion, while I understand that this was an accident, it seems to me that 2 years in jail is simply not enough, and it does not fit the crime. Well, here's a story that didn't surprise me too much when I got the press release, but it appears that the inaugural Tour of America has been postponed. You'll recall that we first started talking about this when they had that big press announcement at Interbike just a couple of months ago, and everyone, including me, was just a bit skeptical about whether or not they would be able to pull this thing off, a Tour de France-style race, and if they'd be able to do it in just the few short months that they had to make this thing happen. Well, the press release came through on March 31st. AKU, the organizers of the Tour of America, have announced that they are rescheduling the inaugural race until September of 2009. According to Frank Arokiasamy, AKU's president and director of the Tour of America, quote, "After we announced the Tour of America last fall, we hit the ground running to make the event happen in 2008. Everyone we've spoken with wants to see a Tour de France-style race here in the U.S. We want to work with USA Cycling and the UCI to establish this event as a complement to the major international races and, at the same time, not conflict with established races in the United States. Overall, we want to make sure the Tour of America strengthens the sport of cycling and the race calendar. In addition, potential sponsors and route cities have expressed strong support for a fall 2009 race. Now, the exact dates for the fall 2009 edition of the Tour of America have not been finalized. The staff is still finalizing route details, sponsorship agreements, and proposed dates to comply with USA Cycling's race application process. We will see whether or not this race actually does happen in 2009. You know, personally, I would love to see this happen. I just think that this is a humongous undertaking. And it probably is for the best that they're going to take that extra year to make sure that they have all of their ducks in a row. And quite frankly, I wish them a lot of luck. And speaking of American cycling events, the Tour of Georgia begins next week, April 21st through the 27th. And it will begin on Monday with a stage from Tybee Island, Georgia to Savannah. And guess what? Contrary to what I told you just a few short days ago, it looks like Rock Racing will indeed be on the starting line on Monday, April the 21st. Now, there's sort of a confluence of events that occurred to allow this to happen. First of all, Spanish-based Sonier Duval Scott dropped out of the event because of several injuries to key riders. Now, that opened up a 15th spot for Rock Racing. Well, at the same time, Rock Racing had filed a lawsuit against the race organizer, which was then settled out of court. These two events caused organizers and Rock Racing to agree to allow Rock to be there at the finish line to try to contest this year's 2008 Tour of Georgia. Rock Racing's owner Michael Ball was quoted in a press release on the team's website as saying, quote, "The fans told us they wanted us to be there. We're pleased that we were able to work with medalists to come to a mutually beneficial decision. Now the race will truly field the best of the best of international and domestic pro cycling teams, which will only build on the momentum created for domestic cycling at the Tour of California." So stay tuned next week for the coverage of the Tour of Georgia, April the 21st through the 27th, including the bad boys of cycling themselves, Rock Racing. Well, let's move on and talk a little bit more about the world of professional cycling, starting with something that I brought up on the show just a couple of weeks ago, because I got a message from a listener who told me that they were interested in seeing some sort of a timeline that would really explain this whole row that's going on between the UCI and ASO and the other Grand Tour organizers. Well, one of my listeners, one of you great Fredcast listeners out there, sent me an email and said that there is a great chronology over on the Cycling News website. I took a look at it, and it definitely gives you everything you needed to know from start until today of how we got into this mess with the UCI and ASO, the organizers of the Tour de France, and the organizers of the Vuelta a España and the Giro d'Italia. I've put a link in the show notes. I highly recommend it to you if you'd like to do a little bit of light reading to find out exactly how this whole argument began. Go to www.thefredcast.com. Up at the top of the page, there is a little tab that says show notes. Click on that. Today's show is show number 96. Well, there have been a couple of races that have happened since the last time we spoke, so let's look at some race results, starting with the Tour of Flanders. I had a great time watching this one while I was doing an indoor cycling workout, because it was, of course, snowing outside. And wow, this was really exciting. And it was won by Belgian and Belgian national champion, by the way, Stijn de Volder from Team Quickstep. He did it in 6 hours, 24 minutes, and 2 seconds. Now, Stijn was part of a five-man break that went away 40 kilometers from the finish. He then went away from that group with 25 kilometers to go and stayed away even from chasers Nick Noyens from Belgium and Cofidis and Juan Antonio Flecha from Spain and Team Rabobank, despite the chase and despite the fact that Flecha came very close even at the end. By the time it came down to the finish, DeVolder had plenty of time to make sure his jersey was zipped, that his sponsor's logo and the Belgian colors could be seen, and he looked up into the heavens as if he couldn't believe himself that he was winning the Tour of Flanders, and the local fans were going absolutely crazy. It was a very exciting finish and a great thing to watch. DeVolder was followed across the finish line by Nick Noyens in second place, 15 seconds back, and in third with the same time, Juan Antonio Flecha. In fourth place, Alessandro Bayon, 21 seconds back, followed by, in fifth place, George Hincapie from Team High Road. Next up is the Vuelta a País Vasco, or the Tour of the Basque Country. And this one was dominated by a name you well know, Alberto Contador from Team Astana. Contador won the Tour of the Basque Country after winning the sixth and final stage, an individual time trial. He finished the 12-mile stage 22 seconds ahead of Cadel Evans of Australia for an overall time of 21 hours, 3 minutes, 59 seconds. Cadel Evans was 30 seconds back overall to finish in second place in the general classification. And you may remember, he's been second place before. He was second to Alberto in last year's Tour de France. Now, as you well know, Alberto will not have the opportunity to defend his Tour de France title because his Team Astana has been banned from this year's Tour de France. So at the end of the race, Contador was quoted as saying, "This victory is so important as I could show that I am as good or even better than the other big Tour favorites." It seems that what he has on his mind for this year is to try to dominate as many multiple-day stage races as he can, to almost invalidate whomever it is that comes out wearing the yellow jersey on the Champs-Élysées in July. And in the one-day midweek classic Gent-Wevelgem, it came down to a sprint finish at the line, and Oscar Freire from Rabobank took the 209-kilometer race in 4 hours, 53 minutes, and 6 seconds, narrowly edging Aurélien Clerc from France and Bouygues Telecom, and third place Wouter Weiland from Belgium and Team Quickstep. Fourth place went to Eric Zabel from Milram, and fifth from Kenny DeHaes from Belgium and Team Top Sport. And so with those Pro Tour races behind us, the current 2008 rankings in first place from Germany, it's André Greipel with 62 points, followed closely by Alberto Contador from Spain with 58, and in third, Stijn DeVolder from Belgium with 50 points. In first place among the teams, Team High Road followed, well, tied with Team Astana, both of whom have 56 points. And in third, Castapagna with 55 points. Now, the Pro Tour season is still young. We have a number of Pro Tour events coming up in the coming weeks, including the Tour de Romandie, April 29th through May the 4th, and the Amstel Gold Race on April 20th. Unfortunately, world champion Paolo Bettini will not be at the Amstel Gold Race due to a recent injury that he incurred. Bettini broke a rib in a crash that happened in the Tour of the Basque Country, the Vuelta a País Vasco, and his Quickstep team is hoping that he'll be back in time at least for Liège-Bastogne-Liège on April the 27th. And in our final race results for this week, it's the famous Paris-Roubaix. So if any of you are in the United States and you're hoping to watch the race on Versus this weekend, this is a spoiler alert. It's time for you to fast forward to the next story so you don't find out exactly what happened. Okay, for those of you who have stayed, I have good news and I have bad news. The good news is that Tom Bonin has won his second Paris-Roubaix in a sprint finish in the Velodrome against Fabian Cancellara and Alessandro Bayon. Bonin won the 259.5-kilometer race in 5 hours, 58 minutes, and 42 seconds, again followed closely by second-place Cancellara and third-place Bayon. The three went away with 35 kilometers to go, but by the time they were done with the final cobblestone sections, Bonin did look much less tired than the other two. And at the end, he did win in the sprint finish. The bad news, of course, for those of you who are George Hincapie fans and were hoping that this was going to be his year, George Hincapie from Team High Road came in 5 minutes, 12 seconds back in ninth place behind Tom Bonin. Now, of course, Tom Bonin's Quickstep teammate, Steen DeVolder, had won the Tour of Flanders earlier in the week. And Quickstep's team director, Wilfried Peters, was quoted as saying, "It was our week of truth, and we ended up winning the two greatest races on the calendar." And two quick doping-related stories. The first has to do with Jan Ullrich. Now, you will recall that Ullrich retired in February of last year and that he was withdrawn just before the 2006 Tour de France after he was implicated in the Spanish Operation Puerto affair. Well, the case was built against Ullrich that was based on fraud. Essentially, the case was that he had defrauded the public, his sponsors, and his T-Mobile team as a result of these doping allegations. The case has now settled. Ullrich has paid his way out of the course, paying a six-figure sum to charity and to the state to end the probe, which had lasted 21 months. The BBC quoted Ullrich as saying, "I am very happy that the accusations are off the table. It was harder to overcome than any tour. At least there I could face and fight my rivals on the bike. I have not bought my freedom," he said. "The decision I have taken serves to protect my family. The investigation has been ended without a declaration of guilt. I could not have admitted anything because I have never lied to anybody." And in Italy, Giro d'Italia winner Danilo De Luca has now been cleared of doping by an Italian Olympic Committee commission because of insufficient evidence. Now, the Italian Olympic Committee had wanted De Luca banned for 2 years because he showed low hormone levels in last year's Giro d'Italia. However, a spokesman said that there was insufficient degree of probability to rule against De Luca, and as a result, the charges have been dropped despite De Luca's three-month ban by the Italian Olympic Committee last October. No word yet as to whether or not we're going to see De Luca back in competition on his bicycle this year. In other news, in a series of suits and countersuits between Trek Bicycles and Greg LeMond, Trek Bicycles is now trying to sever their connections to LeMond Bicycles. Trek has been promoting and marketing the LeMond bikes for a number of years, and they are now seeking to sever that relationship, mostly because of the ongoing statements and actions by Greg LeMond against Lance Armstrong and, by extension, against Trek Bicycles. According to a story on bikebiz.com, Burke gave a presentation to Trek employees recently and was quoted as saying, "Despite a series of innovative designs and continued support from Trek, due to LeMond's actions and the public response, the LeMond brand has consistently failed to live up to its potential in the marketplace. For years, Trek has tried our best to make this relationship work, and for years, Greg LeMond has done and said things that have damaged the LeMond brand and the Trek brand as a whole. His actions are inconsistent with our values, values we believe in and live every day. And after years of trying to make it work, we are done." Meanwhile, in news that seems related, Trek announced that they will be reintroducing the Klein bicycle line to its worldwide dealers this summer. Apparently, this line is going to replace the LeMond line in Trek dealers. According to the director of product development for Trek Bicycles, Trek is developing the new line expressly for Klein. Quote, "Since there is a current Klein brand with its own unique product mix and brand identity, we will not be selling any current products that Trek developed for any of our other brands relabeled as Klein. Details on the Klein launch will be revealed at the Trek dealer meeting in August of this year." Now, what you're hearing are the sounds of a new bicycle anatomy video that was released by Carlton Reed and QuickRelease.tv. This is a great video for you to show your friends who just do not understand the various parts of a bicycle. Carlton filmed the video and put it together and made sure that he was able to label as many parts of a bicycle as possible and to give as many of the names of those parts as he could. But what you're hearing in the background is music created by Greg Johnson, using only sounds created by bicycles and bicycle parts. It's a really great melding of video technology and electronic music technology into a really cool video. I recommend you check it out. I have links in the show notes. Well, here's something I think that we all knew, but it's nice to have it confirmed every once in a while, especially by a reputable media outlet like the Daily Mail. According to an article in a recent issue of the Daily Mail, taking regular aerobic exercise like cycling or running could stop the biological clock and delay aging by up to 12 years. Now, this is according to some research that they did and which was published in the British Journal of Sports Medicine. According to the study, if you engage in regular exercise and bring your level of exertion enough to raise your heart rate to 120 beats a minute or higher, the effect is the equivalent of turning back the biological clock by up to 12 years. According to Dr. Roy Shepherd, from Toronto University, quote, a regular exercise program can slow or reverse the loss of aerobic fitness, reducing the individual's biological age and prolonging independence. Now, other evidence shows that regular activity cuts the risk of a range of health problems, including diabetes, depression, and heart disease, and it also reduces the chances of premature death from any illness. Translation, get on your bike and enjoy the ride. Now, for those of you who ride at night, you know that it can be quite dangerous sometimes because cars don't always recognize us cyclists out there on the road. Well, here's an invention that is coming soon that may help you when you're riding at night. Michael Chen, an American inventor based in the United Kingdom, won an international design competition. He won £6,000 for his reactive cycle jacket, and it changes colors as you hit the brakes. According to Chen, the inspiration came from wanting to feel safer when cycling the streets of London. He said, quote, I cycled around London in the dark wearing my first prototype. It was a 10-pound waterproof jacket with LEDs stuck on by gaffer tape. For the first time, I noticed that cars passed me more slowly, gave me more room, and that the drivers and passengers were even making eye contact. This is really cool. The jacket includes an iPhone-like accelerometer. It senses your movement, and so that when you hit the brakes, it senses that deceleration and then changes the LEDs on the back of the jacket from green to red. A tilt switch in the jacket also makes LEDs in the arms flash when you're lifting your arm to indicate a turn. Very cool idea. I think that this is something that a lot of cyclists would be very happy to have, and I hope to see it coming to market very soon. And finally, in the news tonight, while I typically like to end with sort of a humorous or sort of quirky story, tonight I'm ending with something serious. American cycling star Davis Finney is now recovering from two brain operations that were done this month to help relieve some of the symptoms of his Parkinson's disease. Now, if you're not familiar with Davis Finney, he's 48 years old, and he competed for the United States in the Olympics. And in 1986, he became the first American ever to win a road stage of the Tour de France. Finney was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease about 8 years ago. And this month, in the brain surgery, they implanted essentially like a brain pacemaker that will be used once it's turned on to send electrical signals to the brain, hopefully helping to trick the brain into ignoring some of the effects of Parkinson's disease. So I tell you this story now at the end of the news so that all of us can send our thoughts and our prayers out to Davis Finney and his family for a quick and speedy recovery to his operation and also for a successful outcome from the use of this new brain pacemaker. So Davis, good luck and tailwinds. And that's going to do it for the news for this week's episode of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast. Story about a woman by the name of Paula Stout. I received an email a few days ago from a listener who wanted me to know about Paula's story. Paula was getting ready for a mountain bike race and was doing a little bit of warming up, including some riding on the street. And as she was heading down the street, a car stopped going the opposite direction as if it was going to turn left, but it was not signaling, and it appeared as if the car was going to wait for Paula to ride by. Unfortunately, at the last moment, the car initiated its left-hand turn right in front of Paula, and there was literally nothing she could do. Paula slammed into the windshield of the car, went up and over the car, and landed in a ditch. Thankfully, there were a number of Good Samaritans and other bike racers nearby, all of whom took excellent care of her until the emergency medical teams arrived and took Paula in the ambulance to the hospital. You know, I read a lot of stories about accidents like this, stories that do not end with Paula herself being able to tell us the exact story of what occurred that day. But in this case, Paula is able to tell her story and is continuing to do so on a blog that she created. And I've put a link in the show notes to that blog, and I've also put a link into the Enhanced podcast so that you can go and check it out. Now, there is also a link in the show notes to some of Paula's photos. They are quite gory, so consider this to be your warning. If you're a bit faint of heart, if you don't like the sight of blood and of people getting sutured, then don't look at the photos. But I think that it is important for all of us to have a look at what Paula has to say about her experience. I have to say, she has a very positive attitude. It's wonderful to see her smiling. I got an email from her today, and she says that she is almost back on her bike, albeit on a trainer, but almost back on her bike, and that is really good news. Take a look at Paula's story. There but for the grace of God, go you, go I. And I think that we can all learn a little bit, not just from her experience, and hopefully try to come up with some way to avoid what she went through, but also share her story with those who are your friends and your family who are not cyclists, so they can also understand the real importance of making sure that they notice cyclists on the road. Remember the awareness video that I told you about? And that you all went to look at, and that I've gotten emails from a lot of you about, that you didn't notice that one thing that you should have noticed. Well, the same goes for cyclists, and the same goes for Paula. Paula, we're glad you're doing better, and we hope that your story perhaps helps to save the lives of others in the future. Well, now it's time for review, which is, well, quite honestly, long overdue. It has been, well, probably at least a year since I told you I was going to do a review of the most popular power meters on the market. I have reviewed the iBike, I've reviewed the Polar CS600, and I've reviewed the PowerTap. And the one which has been the glaring missing power meter has been the SRM. And I've got to preface this review by letting you know the reason for the delay and my hesitance in doing this review. The simple fact of the matter is that now having used three other power meters, and now also having used the SRM side by side with each of them, I've got to tell you that I simply don't understand the reason why a recreational or an amateur racing cyclist would want to spend the amount of money necessary on the SRM when there are so many other good choices available out there in power meters? Now, I know that that's a bold statement, and quite honestly, I have just continued to use the SRM to try to understand what the difference is. And quite honestly, I have not been able to find the reason why I, as a high-end, knowledgeable, technologically oriented cyclist, would need to spend the additional money necessary on this product. So let's get this out of the way up front. Let's look at pricing. Okay, we've talked about the iBike. The iBike Pro Power Meter, suggested retail, $429. The Polar CS600 with power, suggested retail, $710. The PowerTap SL with Shimano hub, about $1,100. The SRM training system, amateur edition for road cycles, $2,300. That is a sizable difference in price. And unfortunately, as you're about to find out, I did not find a sizable difference in features or performance. Now remember, I'm not a professional racer. I am an amateur, recreational, high-end endurance cyclist. Power is important to me for training and for performance. If you're a professional racer, there probably may be a reason why you want the SRM. But for you and me, I just don't see it. Let's get into the review. First of all, let's talk a little bit about the way that the SRM power meter works. Now, we've talked about several different kinds of power meters on the show so far, but the way that the SRM works is by using strain gauges, which are mounted as part of your cranks and chainring system. Those strain gauges measure the amount of force that you're putting into the pedals, converting that into a power or watts measurement. It also uses a reed switch within the same assembly to sense your cadence. And then in order to sense your distance and your speed, it uses a standard wheel magnet, just like your average everyday bicycle computer. One of the things I did like about the SRM is that it uses a Polar heart rate strap, so that if you've already got a Polar watch or if you are cross-training, you can use the same heart rate strap that you would use with your standard Polar system. By the way, you can also use a Suunto heart rate strap with your SRM system as well. So you're looking at a very standard heart rate strap, nothing proprietary. That is a good thing. However, what's not such a good thing is that the SRM does not include a heart rate monitor strap with the system. So you're spending, again, I'm sorry to keep harping on this, but it really, really got to me. You're spending $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, up to $5,000 or $6,000 on this system, and it doesn't include a heart rate strap. It seems to me that for that amount of money, there's no excuse why the heart rate monitor strap can't be included with the power monitor system that you purchased. Now, what is clear is that what does add to the price of the SRM, besides what isn't in the box, is what is in the box. You get the head unit, that's the computer that you mount on your handlebar, and all of the associated wires and mounting brackets that you need. You also get a charger for the head unit because it does not include a user replaceable battery. Instead, it's a rechargeable battery. But what perhaps is one of the most expensive portions, besides the strain gauges themselves, is the fact that the SRM includes new cranks for your bike. So if you've already got Campy cranks, or you've got FSA, or perhaps you've got Shimano cranks, you're going to end up changing out your cranks and putting on what comes with the SRM. And they have a wide variety of cranks available in both standard and compact size. They have Shimano, Cannondale hollow cranks. They've also got FSA cranks, so a wide variety of cranks. And the available options include, as I mentioned earlier, the amateur Rode power meter, which has just two strain gauges. They've also got one which is called the professional Rode system, which has four strain gauges, on up to a system that has eight strain gauges. And as you can imagine, SRM says that the accuracy of the system goes up with the number of strain gauges available. So for instance, if you get the amateur Rode version with the two strain gauges, they say their accuracy is plus or minus 5%. The professional version with the four strain gauges, accuracy of plus or minus 2%. And with the eight strain gauges, they have plus or minus 0.5% accuracy. So if you consider what is in that box, you can now understand what it is that makes the SRM that much more expensive than some of the other power meters out there on the market. Now, what about the installation of your SRM? For me, because of the cranks that SRM sent me, it meant that not only did I need to replace the cranks on my bike, which for many of you means tools that perhaps you don't have or maybe that you've never used, for me, it not only meant removing the cranks, but it also meant replacing the bottom bracket. Personally, I don't have the tools and I'm not comfortable performing that kind of a service. That meant that I had to take my bike to a professional independent bicycle dealer in order to get the SRM installed on my bike. So you might have to change your bottom bracket. You definitely will have to change your cranks. Other than that, the installation goes very similarly to installing your average everyday bike computer on your bike by installing your wheel sensor, your cadence sensor, etc. And with the SRM, you do have the option of either having a rear wheel sensor for your speed or a front wheel sensor for your speed. I highly recommend the rear wheel because if you're going to be doing any training indoors, you're going to need that in order to be able to get the speed data onto your SRM head unit. Now, once again, I have to be honest and tell you that one of the things that really sort of burned me about the SRM was the fact that there is no printed manual. It does indeed come with a CD-ROM that you can put into your computer and that you can look at a PDF or print out about a 100-page manual that's available both on the CD and on the SRM website. But quite honestly, if I'm going to spend over $2,000 for a product, I don't see any reason why they can't include a printed manual. I had this same objection about some of the other power meters that we reviewed here on the show. The difference being that those were less expensive. If I'm going to spend this much money, give me a printed manual because chances are I do not have a computer in my workshop. And if I'm going to be working on this thing, I want to have the manual in front of me and not be running inside and outside between my office where my computer is and outside where I'm working on my bike. So that really sort of burned me. However, there are several online videos which are produced by Carmichael Training Systems, which are excellent. They cover caring for your SRM, installing your SRM, setting the zero offset, something you have to do before you go for every ride, and helping to explain how much fluctuation in your power levels is acceptable on your SRM. There is no doubt that those videos were very helpful to me. And if you buy an SRM, you will also find them very helpful. And you can find them on the SRM website. And of course, there is a link in the show notes to that website. I mentioned the head unit earlier. That's what most of you would consider to be the cycle computer. That unit will display a variety of information, including your power in watts, your speed in either kilometers per hour or miles per hour, your distance, your heart rate, your cadence, and of course it will also give you the average and max for each of those, and also will give you your mechanical energy or kilojoules, which as we talked about in a previous review, will also yield the calories burned. Of course, it'll also give you the day, the year, the time of day, the month, and the temperature. And you can also record lap times, mark the start and finish of a climb that you might use for a test. You can mark a competition section of a race day so that you can tell where the start and finish were. And of course, you can also use it for intervals. Now that tells you what the head unit will do, but I'm going to tell you that from my perspective, I found the three buttons on the head unit, each labeled Pro, Set, and mode to be completely non-intuitive. And no matter how long I continued to use the power control and the SRM power meter, I never really got the hang or memorized what each of those buttons' functions were. And I found myself fumbling and staring at that head unit far too often and far more than many other cycle computers I've used, not just other power meters. So I just don't find the controls of the SRM to be nearly as intuitive as they should be. And the more I thought about it, if I got to the end of a double century, for instance, and I was feeling particularly oxygen deprived, there was no way at that point that I was going to know what each of those buttons were for. Now, I mentioned earlier that the SRM's head unit has a rechargeable battery. I found that a simple overnight charge connected to a regular 110-volt electrical outlet was enough to power the SRM for several weeks. Also, as I mentioned before, and this is the case with several of the other power meters we've talked about, in order to ensure that you're getting an accurate reading and a consistent reading ride after ride, you do have to set the zero offset on the power meter before every ride. It is very simple. Once you've memorized the keystrokes for it, it takes really no time at all. And as long as you remember to do it, you know that you're always going to get repeatable results with the SRM ride after ride. The SRM does include PC software, but once again, PC only. It will not run on a Mac, at least natively on a Mac. I was able to get it to run in emulation using Parallels under Windows XP. No problem at all doing that. It worked very, very well. Once again, however, the software, it's not pretty. It's very functional. You can see the German engineering that went into this software. Not particularly pretty. However, the graphs that come out are extremely detailed. And so if you like to analyze your data down to the most minute detail, the SRM software is going to give you perhaps some of the most detailed graphs of any of the proprietary software that I saw from any of the other manufacturers. However, I think that you've probably learned over the last couple of weeks that for me, I've stopped using any of the proprietary software from any of the other computer, GPS, or power meter manufacturers, and instead have started using the WKO Plus software from Training Peaks. I just find that being able to have that one consistent interface is better for me. Nevertheless, if you're not interested in buying that extra piece of software, the SRM software will do a basic job for you, just like all of the other proprietary pieces of software that you would get from your other bike computer manufacturers. Now, the one question I seem to be asked the most every time I do a power meter review is, can you compare the accuracy of power meter A against power meter B? And I had a chance to do that with several of the power meters that I have been testing. What I have found is that all of the power meters that I've tested, if properly calibrated and properly installed, will yield similar results within plus or minus a few percentage points of each other, depending on making sure that everything is installed correctly. However, what I have also learned is that for me, as a recreational cyclist, as long as I have one power meter that is working reliably and consistently, if it's giving me a power meter of 200 watts, then that is a relative 200 watts for me. Whether I'm actually outputting an absolute 200 watts or whether I'm outputting a 220 watts absolute isn't important to me. What's important is that I know when I did a particular section, let's say I do a fitness test, and let's say I averaged, example, 230 watts over that fitness test using power meter X. As long as the next time I go to do that same fitness test on the same road with that same power meter X, I know that the results that I get, perhaps the second time I did 230 watts over that instead of 220, I know that I have made an improvement, a 10-watt improvement over that course. However, if I put power meter X on that course for the first time I tried it, I come up with 220 watts. And then the next time I go to do that same course, I use power meter Y and I get 220 watts. I don't know, because of the differences in the way that each power meter measures my power output, I don't know that that 220 watts using power meter Y is equivalent to the 220 watts that was displayed on power meter X. The bottom line of all of this is, if you buy any of the power meters that I have reviewed, you're going and you set them up properly, they're installed properly, they're calibrated properly, and you're doing any pre-ride setup that you have to do, you're going to get a consistent result and you're going to get a relative power rating that you can use to measure your performance, to show improvements, and that you can use in your training planning, and if you're using a coach, with your coach to plan your training. The simple fact of the matter is, unless you are a professional cyclist and unless you are using your power ratings against the power ratings of others on your team, the absolute power output, in my opinion, is not what's important. What's important is that relative power output. Get a good power meter, get one that you can afford, set it up properly, and it will perform properly for you and will become an excellent training aid in ensuring consistent and constant improvement in your cycling. The bottom line of my review of the SRM power meter, for me, I would not spend the money. I would look at one of the less expensive power meters that I've reviewed previously. And in a coming show, I'll do a wrap-up and a roundup of all of the power meters that I've reviewed, giving you my pluses and minuses, and giving you my final recommendation as to which two power meters of the four that I've reviewed that I would recommend. Look for that coming up soon on another episode of the Fredcast. And with that, we are going to get ready to close out another episode of the Fredcast. This is episode 96. Remember, you only have three episodes to get your postcards in, so make sure you do. Hey, there's a number of ways that you can contact the Fredcast. One way to stay in touch with what's going on here at the Fredcast and get a few tidbits of what's going on in the world of cycling is to follow our Twitter feed, and that's at www.twitter.com/Fredcast, or send a message, text message from your phone to 40404, say follow Fredcast, but remember, normal text messaging rates will apply. Of course, you can send me an email, text, or audio anytime you like. The email address is thefredcast@gmail.com. That's thefredcast@gmail.com. And of course, if you want to send an audio comment, you can do that via our listener hotline at area code 435-258-6FRED. That's 435-258-6373, and the Skype name is The Fredcast. And don't forget, visit our website at www.thefredcast.com, not only to check out the show notes, but also to take a look at how you can sign up for the MS-150 team, or how you can enter into our contest, and as well, take a look at any blog postings that come up in between the shows. And now before we close the show, as we do every week, I'm bringing you PodSafe cycling music. And this week's music is coming to you from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. Tonight's artist is the Michael E. Thomas Band, and the song is When Bullets Fly. Show notes have links to where you can find out more information about the artist and also where you can find the song, the album, and the artist on iTunes. So between this week and next, thank you so much for listening to the Fredcast. Thanks for staying subscribed. Thanks for all your comments and emails and audio comments, your donations, and just generally for supporting the show. So between this week and next, thanks for listening. Enjoy the music, but most of all, enjoy the ride. We'll be right back.
wondered if I'll ever fall in love again. Like a hurricane, she stormed into my life, tearing up everything just for spite. She had flaming hair, played a violin of gold, her rattlesnake charm tortured my soul. Broken dreams reflecting her eyes, quiet scenes from a shattered life. When innocent hearts play the devil's game, it's a sticky situation. Just infatuation. She'll catch you with a fine line. I fall for it every time. Run as she changes before she locks you in her cages. My hands were shaky as I realized my fate. I was falling in love.